Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Thanks for taking the time to download our podcast this week. I'm John Montgomery. Mike Seymour is going to be speaking with the folks from GenArts about their announcement of Sapphire version 5 for the Autodesk Systems products. But before we get to that, I just want to thank everyone for the really kind comments about our two Nuke features with artists from IBC. I think we really got a lot of fantastic comments from that and kind of hit home with a lot of the artists, so thanks for that. Also appreciate all the comments on the Smoke on Mac announcement, including the FX Guide TV episode. We'd have really loved to share a lot more, but we're on beta, and as such, actually things are continually changing in the beta process. One thing's there 1 week and getting fixed and working the next. So couldn't really do a really hardcore breakdown of feature comparisons and so forth until the actual release of the software in the coming months. But rest assured, we'll be doing that moving forward. So again, thanks for all the support on that, and glad that we were able to bring that discussion to you. Well, as I mentioned earlier, we're talking about Sapphire version 5. It's a release that's going to be available for the Autodesk Systems products in the first quarter of 2010. And what's happened is the folks at GenArts have really spent a considerable amount of time really optimizing these plugins. And optimizing them, I should say, for floating point support, which is really quite critical. They don't support floating point at this point in time, so it's a big leap in the kind of type of image quality and work you can do with them. But on top of that, they optimize them from a CPU standpoint, making the code sleeker, and even more importantly than that, actually porting a lot of the code to the CUDA programming language. And what that does, it allows an application to take advantage of the GPUs to do really fast parallel processing. If you remember, we did an FX Guide TV episode around the IBC timeframe where we showed a bit of Adobe tech preview of an upcoming version of Premiere. Now, they didn't really say what version of Premiere it was, but basically showing high-res, real-time playback of in a Premiere timeline with color correction, blurs, and so forth all in real time. And that's the kind of processing power that you get. So similarly, on the effects standpoint, the GenArts Sapphire plugins are going to be running tremendously faster. In fact, in their speed comparisons, they've quoted the Blur Motion plugin running over 7 times faster, Edge Rays over 5 times, and even, you know, those simple plugins, I say simple myself, Lens Flare, Spotlight, and Texture Neurons over 2 times faster. And that's utilizing, again, the GPU for parallel processing. Well, why don't we go ahead and hear more about the plugins? Mike Seymour sat down this week with GenArts CMO Steve Bannerman to get an overview of the offering that they're coming out with next year, as well as Vice President of Engineering and Chief Scientist Gary Oberbrunner to really find out what happened under the hood and how they made the plugins faster. Let's go ahead and join that conversation now. Mike first speaking with Steve Bannerman.
So in a few minutes, we'll talk to Gary from an engineering standpoint, but I wanted to talk to you first, if we could, about some of the sort of strategic and also broader brushstrokes of what's happening with the release that you've just made. Could you tell us what... Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, so yeah, we're pretty excited about the fact that we're announcing Sapphire 5. Sapphire 5 is an extremely exciting product for us because it's going to come, we believe, significantly change the way people work with visual effects in their pipelines. The product is fully GPU enabled and also supports full floating point workflows. So we're seeing some incredible increases in performance, up in the order of 700% increases in performance, as well as supporting full photorealistic image quality with the highest possible dynamic range. So again, this is a pretty darn exciting release for us.
So now just give us the actual details on the release. Like, when is it actually coming out, and when can people actually get their hands on it?
So the release is scheduled to actually ship in the first calendar quarter of 2010. One of the reasons why we're sort of announcing the product now is because we understand how the budget process works for many of our customers. And over the years, when we've announced the product right when it shipped, they said, well, you know, we just did our budget process and we didn't put it in the budget for this year, and we wish we had known about it earlier. So one of the things that we're doing now is sort of making the announcement. We've got some great preliminary findings as far as the performance metrics are concerned in the release, and those were in the press release. And we're going to be, you know, sort of working our way with face-to-face meetings with many of our customers over the coming months to sort of show them the product firsthand, give them an opportunity to see it at work.
So these speed improvements that we're seeing, are all users going to experience that? I mean, I can't imagine that it's going to be equal across the board. Or is this something specific to 2010 release?
Well, you know, obviously, since we've chosen to use the NVIDIA GPU and the CUDA API, in order to get the full benefit of the GPU, you'll need a Flame 2010 or better. But as we described earlier, since we've optimized the code in many ways, everyone across the board is going to see some improvement in performance. Everyone's going to be able to take advantage of the full floating point workflows, so they'll get the higher image quality and the higher dynamic range. But those folks that want to get the full bang out of the GPU acceleration will definitely need the Flame 2010 or better.
So in terms of your sort of company now, we've spoken to you guys a couple of times with the acquisitions you've made and the expansion you've made, how significant are the Autodesk systems products in terms of your sort of business moving forward?
Well, they're very important for a couple of different reasons. I mean, not only are they, you know, a huge component of our install base, so obviously it's a very important market segment for us from a revenue perspective, but you know, these are the customers that are also our most avid and fervent supporters. In many cases, they're our most early adopters. They're the ones that get, they get really excited about our products and really exploit the full potential of our products in many ways. So it's a market segment that makes perfect sense to introduce to, you know, Sapphire 5 first. We're really, really excited about the profile that they're going to give our new product.
So for those that that don't have a press release in front of them, well, let's just go through some of those indicators of the speed performance, because I think they are really significant. Because there's a point at which then the process of doing visual effects, if you can't iteratively keep adjusting it and re-rendering, you just have to stop, and that is almost the thing that can define the quality level that you pitch to. So big speed improvements can make a big difference to how well something can finally look. And can you just walk us through some of the examples of the speed improvements you get? I know that the motion blur one you mentioned before is a 7x improvement.
Exactly. And, you know, things like edge rays are, you know, giving us a 5x improvement in performance. Commonly used effects like lens flares are over double the performance they were before. Things like texture neurons and spotlights are also giving us over double the performance. So these kinds of things can not only help speed the final renders in the render farms, you know, by a huge factor, things that usually took overnight are now sort of over lunch, but it really sort of strips away a lot of the barriers to creativity. You know, especially when you're in client-attended sessions or client-supervised sessions where you really want to do the what-ifs and move things around and you don't have to wait for screen refreshes and things like that. It really is full interactivity even at HD res.
So tell me, in this new Sapphire 5, are we getting any new actual effects, or is it just the current set now with the better quality and better speed?
You know, there will be some new effects, but we're sort of holding those for the special surprise when we ship. So we're not making the announcements on which new effects will be in the release, but there will be some new effects.
If this build, this release, has been focused on the speed improvements and architectural increases, is increased functionality, in other words, the breadth of the effects that you're offering, would that be sort of on the planning horizon beyond Sapphire 5? And what's the sort of direction you want to take the product in?
Well, I don't really want to spend too much time talking about, you know, future releases beyond Sapphire 5, but certainly we took advantage of the opportunity to re-architect the product such that it would make it, an even better platform going forward for delivering, amazing new effects and functionality. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're going to go in and start, you know, changing the architecture and rethinking and re-optimizing, you want to be able to set yourself up for the most flexibility and the most power going forward.
Because, of course, a lot of us are enthusiastic about 5 and hope that you've just set the stage to be able to expand on things that you previously couldn't do.
And that's the case when you get dramatic improvements in performance. It really does give you the ability to start contemplating things that you just couldn't do before.
So before I get into a technical discussion, I just wanted to also quiz you about your company's attitude to the announcement this week from Smoke on Mac, because one of the big aspects of that is the fact that out of the gate there aren't plugins for that Smoke, and yet, of course, what made Autodesk products so successful from the earliest days was the support of companies like GenArts.
Well, again, you know, I want to reiterate how important the Autodesk segment of the market is to us, and all you have to do is sort of look back into our history and see how committed we've been to supporting, you know, our customers in that segment. But we're not really in a position right now to make any announcements one way or the other about any other new products except Sapphire 5. And, you know, that's something that we would potentially be available to talk about sometime in the future, but it's not something that I really want to cover today.
You can imagine that as enthusiastic as everyone is about Sapphire 5, and we totally are, there's also a keen interest to in that Smoke on Mac, because obviously one wonders whether that'd be in a path that other Autodesk systems products will go down, and certainly it's had a good reaction from people. But yeah, I understand it's worth the fishing exercise.
Yeah, and I understand your enthusiasm for that product, and you know, but at this point we're just not in a position to make any announcements one way or the other about it.
So in terms of pricing on 5, and in terms of support and everything else, has anything else changed in this release other than what we've just discussed?
Yeah, you know, again, I think we're going to save the specifics around pricing for when we get closer to actually shipping the product. But for now, I don't have a specific announcement to make on pricing yet.
Well, with that, let's get, if we could, I'm just going to jump over and talk to Gary, if we could, about some of the technical aspects, and see if I can quiz Gary on the floating point stuff, if I could.
Sure. Hi, Mike.
Your position is that of VP of Engineering and Chief Scientist at GenArts.
Yep, that's right. I've been doing this for about 12 years with Carl.
Yeah. And we thank you for it. I guess the critical question is to discuss this floating point implementation and just how complete it is and how much of a challenge it was to move. Because, I mean, how much of the code base had to be rewritten, and how structurally different is this?
Well, first of all, that's a lot of questions. So, first of all, everything is going to be floating point. So there won't be any clamping anywhere on any plugin. That's a pretty significant advance, I think. Architecturally, we took the opportunity since we were, you know, when we started the company, it was all SGI IRIX.
Sure.
And in those days, fixed-point math was just faster because the MIPS processors had a faster integer ALU than they did floating-point. But the world's turned upside down now because you have SSE and the fast Intel processors. Floating point math is way faster than integer math. And in fact, to your point earlier, you would think that by going from fixed point to floating point, you might slow things down. But actually, we've seen our floating point CPU plugins going faster than the version 4 CPU fixed point ones did in most cases.
Because it's all happening
on the GPU. Without the GPU.
Without the GPU or with the GPU?
No, that's even without the GPU.
Oh, really?
Because we have to make sure that everything still works on any machine, sure, whether or not you have a modern NVIDIA GPU. So there's an automatic fallback in the software so that if you don't have a GPU, it'll just use regular floating point, and you'll get identical results. We're fanatical about that kind of thing. So, so even if you don't have a GPU enabled...
Because that was one of the big points that I was going to come to, but you brought it up now, so let's discuss it. Because one of the absolutely pivotal things that you require in a pipeline is that no matter where it's kind of rendered, it looks the same, whether you're doing a preview test on where I am or if you send it out to the farm. And so I was going to discuss that, the need to have that exact results, because even an approximate result isn't close enough if you've spent all this time polishing a look.
Oh, yeah, or if you render one clip on your flame and another clip on the burn and they don't line up, or they have different brightness, or they have some crunchiness or some swimming. No, that would be terrible. So everything is fully designed and tested to be exactly pixel, bit for bit, accurate, the same, no matter whether you have a GPU or not. That's one of the reasons we didn't do this kind of thing years ago with OpenGL, because you can't count on the OpenGL math. But the new CUDA stream processing architecture of the modern GPUs lets you treat them as full floating point units.
So you're getting basically better performance at floating point even if you're not on the GPU. And then the implementation to the GPU is almost like a third variable. And again, how hard was that to do? How much was it a restructuring of what you'd got under the hood?
It was very significant. We went through all of our old code, not just the actual rendering primitives, but the whole architecture of the system. We took the opportunity, since we were doing all this hard work, to clean out a lot of the dark corners of the code and speed things up in other ways as well. So we optimized memory usage, so that more things will fit in memory. We sort of took out some of the overhead. We did a lot of stuff under the hood.
So would it be sort of safe to say that from a position of moving forward, and I know that that Steve hates me when I do this, but from a position moving forward, have you got a new great platform upon which to build out from? Because it seems to me that one of the
things... That's exactly what I would say.
Yeah, great. Because that's what we really hope as a user community, that you guys are going to continue with the great work in terms of producing new, not only just eye candy, but sort of image processing and creative tools that really tap into some of the stuff that's perhaps slightly more esoteric, but tends to be the stuff that gives jobs their pizzazz. And it seems to me that this feels like a great platform to move forward on, rather than a maintenance type release where you're just fixing problems.
No, you're exactly right. We took advantage of the fact that we were doing all this work, and we said, all right, let's just, let's clean it all out, make it really new, modern, sleek, use all the right techniques, but not go overboard, and, give us a real architectural engine that we can build on for years and years to come.
Tell me, when you were implementing this, either with the floating point or the GPU stuff, was there any part of this that surprised you? Was there any aspect of this that you guys discovered once you got into it that was different than when you set out on the, in just in terms of like either happy accidents or just positive stuff that that you found?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, GPU programming is still a very new art. There's not a lot of people in the world who really understand it, and we're building up expertise in our groups here, both on Sapphire and Monsters and Raptors, that teaches us new things every day. We're constantly experimenting and saying, well, what if we put this over in this type of memory, or what if we structure the kernels that way? And I think just this morning, we had one of the kernels of an algorithm was already like 4 or 5 times faster than the CPU version on the GPU. And we tried it a slightly different way and got another factor of 5 out of it just by taking advantage of a particular GPU feature that's not widely advertised.
I mean,
and using it in the right way.
In talking to the team at, say, Autodesk themselves, doing work with the implementation on Mac and what that involved, we got the impression, and they were quite open about it, that they got a really great help with the talking to individual teams. In fact, in their case, they were talking to the NVIDIA team, and the NVIDIA team had weekly conference calls with them and stuff. I'm wondering how much support outside GenArts in terms of you reaching out to some of these companies, because the GPU, as you say, not only are there issues with optimizing them, it's a bit like black magic, but you want to make sure you set up well for what's coming down the pipe, because you are kind of committing to a path with them.
Yes, that's right. We do have strong developer relationships with all the right people there, and that's definitely helpful.
I was going to say, the impression I get is that, in fact, this developer environment is actually quite a supportive space to work in. In other words, it's not like you're hitting your head against a brick wall to get anything done. It actually seems like a quite fast-moving and exciting area.
It absolutely is fascinating. And and NVIDIA has put a lot of time and effort into the developer tools to make it as friendly as it can possibly be to write for such a constrained device environment. One thing I was going to say that's related to that is that Carl Sims and I both come from a background at Thinking Machines years and years ago, where we were doing massively parallel processing for scientific visualization. And back in those days, the mantra was a processor per pixel. And you literally had a processor for each pixel. And, you know, the world sort of moved away from that. And here we are back in that same model again, because that's exactly what you get on a GPU. So to us, it's like back to the future.
Is the level of abstraction, though, enough now that you feel confident in terms of development in broad terms moving forward with what's coming down the pipe from the roadmaps from these companies? Because the thing, of course, that's always risky about anything that's so tightly tied in with any kind of hardware is that it will be valid, as, you know, there are obviously leaps and bounds going on in GPUs that we've not that we've been benefiting from for years now.
Yeah, that's a legitimate concern. It's one of the reasons we didn't jump into this a year or two ago, because the tools weren't there and things were changing too rapidly. But now you're beginning to see open standards emerge. We're using CUDA, which is NVIDIA's latest standard, but OpenCL is coming, and that's going to be a cross-vendor, widely supported graphics programming API. But the good news is that OpenCL and CUDA play very well together, and they're practically the same in terms of the algorithms. So we feel pretty comfortable with that pathway going forward.
So in terms of other standards, because now you've touched on them, you guys are, as a company, are a signatory or a participant to the system that was set up initially from the Foundry to standardize on FX plugins. And I'm wondering, were there any considerations to this? Because the OpenFX format is obviously, you know, something that isn't specifically aimed at this particular product. But did you have an eye to that with this move to the GPU stuff? Or is it an irrelevant thing because it just all flows naturally?
Oh, no, absolutely. As you said, we are members of the OpenFX consortium, along with a bunch of other great folks. And we are, the consortium is in active discussion about how to support direct GPU image transfer through the OFX API. And everybody on that committee is bringing their expertise to bear in terms of what's the right way to do that.
And so in every respect, your moves to this GPU stuff is sort of in sync with maintaining that position and that support of trying to get a more standardized approach to the plugin community.
That's exactly right.
Brilliant. Of all of the speedups, we've heard of several examples, but are we seeing any kind of characteristic speedup even on the less sexy end of the market? I know you're hitting some 7x speedups, but just generally, is everything sped up, or is it just the rock stars we've heard about?
So far, everything we've looked at, everything we've got running is faster on the GPU by at least a little bit. There are some things. Well, so any time you process on the GPU, you have to first transfer the image over to the GPU and then process it and then transfer it back. And so there's a certain amount of overhead in that. To me, it's a minor miracle that even something really simple like color ops can go slightly faster on the GPU, because it has to transfer it all the way over there, do all the math, and then, you know, and there's not much math in color ops, and then transfer it all the way back. And it still beats the CPU implementation by a little bit.
Well, it sounds like a terrific release. I can't wait to get our hands on it and have a play with it. And also, of course, we've heard a couple of tempting things about possible new things that you're doing. But if I could just give you one piece of, you know, information going back the other way, we desperately as a community look to you guys to continue to lead the way in giving us new image processing tools. So we really hope that that this will free you up to do that now that you've done this great improvement and re-architecturing. So thank you.
You're very welcome, and we're always open to ideas, and, you know, we love to get ideas from customers. So keep those ideas coming, and we'll keep trying to satisfy those needs.
Well, thanks for giving us an update on what the new Sapphire release entails. And as Steve mentioned, that supports the 2010 releases on the Autodesk Systems products. And the reason he mentioned that is because the 2010 release is the first release that Autodesk started certifying their boards for the CUDA architecture. That's not to say they might be updating drivers and or certifying older hardware as well, especially in the QuadroFX line, which is basically what they've used in their Linux offering from day one. But again, at this point in time, the only ones that are certified are the ones that come with a 2010 system. So that's, as far as support, something that is more of, I guess, of an Autodesk question of certification versus GenArts. Another interesting aspect, and you got to love Mike asking about the pricing on the Smoke on Mac Sapphire plugins. I think that'll be really interesting to see what happens moving forward. It's quite obvious that Autodesk is facing some pricing pressures with the economy and so forth, and frankly, I don't really see that GenArts will be able to offer the same price that they do for their plugins on the, say, advanced Smoke systems that they do on the Smoke on Mac systems. Now, if you watch the FX Guide TV episode regarding Smoke on Mac, you know full well my feelings about charging for software. I'm all for charging a sustainable price for software to ensure future development and future support of a product. I think it's really short-sighted to just try and discount software continually. Eventually, you run out of people to sell to, and that's not healthy for either the company or the artist moving forward. But again, we'll have to see how the pricing works out. Maybe it's similar to percentage to what it costs on the advanced Smoke system. Who knows? But it'll be interesting to see what happens. And at this point in time, the holdup is not actually GenArts, but actually Autodesk in getting the SDK for Sparks ported over to the Macintosh platform. Well, that's it for this week. As always, if you have any comments, you can post them in the Quick Takes section about this podcast. But until next time, for my partners in crime, Jeff Huser and Mike Seymour, thanks for listening.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2008 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.